Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be.
Okay, I know it's not true anymore, but you just can't get enough of that funky show far. So, JB, I know you added that show far. That has got to be the saddest so far in the history of.
No, you haven't heard me blow it.
Oh, okay, well then. All right. Good point.
And
nor have I
something
tried. So. There you go. We're going to return to Yeshaya 29. Yeshaya 29 is a new translation. It was written for four or five chapters that comprise the new prologue to the first volume of Yadayawa. For those of you who have been listening, you know that we recently completed and published. You can buy them at Amazon.com, the printed versions, Coming Home, Volume 1 and 2. And then we went back and completely wrote all new translations, all new commentary and insights. What were the two volumes of observations for our time? And they're now five volumes of observations. And then we rewrote Written in Stone, which was one of the volumes of An Introduction to God. And now we're trying to rewrite the first volume of Yadayawa. And as I was writing it, I had a reason to go into Yeshaya 29, which is a chapter we had not translated yet. And the translation became so intriguing, so germane to what we're talking about, God's reconciliation. We're about to come up to the Day of Reconciliations here shortly this week. That in speaking of the Day of Reconciliations and Yahweh's commitment to the chosen people and yet his frustration with them, as well as his affinity for Dode, this was just such a pertinent prophecy about where we are, how we got to this place, and what God intends, that I thought we would go back to it now and finish it, because it is about Yom Kippurim. It is about Sukkah. It is about the chosen people. It is about Dode. And so it's a marvelous story. And it begins, and we'll start again at the beginning. It's, woe, this is a warning to Ariel, to the Lion of God, and to Aruel, those gathered by God. There's a difference here between the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Masoretic text as to whether it is Ariel or Aruel. And the difference is whether or not it is the Lion of God, which would be a pseudonym for Yehudim Jews, mm-hmm. or if it is those gathered by God, those who engage and endure by God, even the ark or the hearth of God, and the warmth of the covenant of God. We don't know which one of the two, but it doesn't really matter if we're talking about the Lion of God, representing the tribe of Judah, or Aruel, to behold, or Aron, the chest or ark of God. These are all concepts where Yahweh has chosen a symbol to speak of Yehuda. So he is addressing Yehuda by a nickname. And that nickname either applies to the fact that they are the Lion of God. You know, all these new books, the very top of the spine of all of these books now is the Lion of Judah. And so the Lion of God is the majesty of the tribe of Judah. Whether or not it is a Ruel, which it becomes the beloved of God, the hearth of God, those who engage and endure with God. And so it is appropriate for a father to have a nickname for his children, particularly one who's endearing to Yahweh as Yehuda. Ariel, the Lion of God, and Ariel, those gathered by God. He says, Dod was loved. Dod was favored when he camped out for a while because repetitively he chose to allow the feasts to run through their annual cycles. So God is listing one of the reasons that he loved Dod. When Dod was king of Yisrael, the seven Moed Mikre, the feasts, ran through their annual cycles, and they were celebrated. These dates are not casual. They're not, you know, show up if you feel like it. If you want to have a relationship with Yahweh, if you want to be part of the covenant, it is essential that we participate, we answer his invitation to attend these seven parties. He's the creator of the universe. He's the author of life. He is the only means to survive our mortality, and he has invited us to join him in a festival feast seven times a year. When we do it, then we are as beloved as was Dod. When we don't, it's very hard to be favored or loved by God. So, this indicates one of the reasons that Dod was so loved and favored, because he camped out while choosing to allow the feasts to run through their annual cycles year to year. That's also important because when Yahweh celebrates the fulfillment of Yom Kippur, he's coming back with Dod. When Yahweh celebrates the thousand-year Shabbat of Sukkah, of camping out, Dod's going to be our shepherd, the King of Kings. And so it's important for Yahweh to establish the fact that these feasts on a year-to-year basis help us understand the flow of time. And that how year 6,000 Yah is just 13 years from us at this point in the late summer of 2020. God then says, therefore, I will incessantly and emphatically nag, even when oppressed. This is suk. I will seek to influence, speaking clearly so as to plead with and encourage Ariel, the Lion of God, and Aruel, those gathered by God. What does it sound like when someone reads in God's voice, I will incessantly and emphatically nag a group of people?
Yeah, but they want them to listen.
Yeah, but when I read it, I just smile and say, all right, you know, I don't blame him. What are you going to do? They have been religious, they've been stubborn, they've been They've corrupted your testimony. They plastered over it with a Talmud. They've done everything they can to be irritating. And you want to continue to communicate with them. But what are you going to do other than nag them?
Yeah.
I will incessantly and emphatically nag. It's the first time I ever saw the word. So it was one of those that, does it really say that? But it does. God is trying to influence the chosen people, plead with them, encourage them, in spite of what they have become. So therefore, I will incessantly and emphatically nag Ariel, the Lion of God, and those gathered by God. If he didn't care, he wouldn't nag. But he does care. You know, I spent much of today retranslating the what I thought was one of my favorite passages, Hosea 4. And oh my goodness, was I surprised by what I learned and how different Hosea 4 is from what we have dealt with in the past. In fact, let me just read some of Hosea 4. I was shocked as to what God was saying, and it's very, very similar to what we're talking about now, and explains it. It says, begins by saying, listen to the word of Yahweh, children of Israel. Choose to hear. It's Shema, written in the Jews, under the auspices of free will. Choose to listen to the word of Yahweh, children of Israel. Surely, with regard to Yahweh, there is a contentious conflict which needs to be resolved through rational discourse, especially concerning living in the land. This is because there is no honesty, nor integrity, no trustworthiness, nor reliability. There is no sense of devotion. There is no desire, no sense of duty. When it comes to God, there is a complete lack of understanding throughout the land. There are oaths uttered which are spiritually harmful, swearing things which are not true about God, which has become commonplace and counterproductive to the truth, along with cringeworthy lies and debilitating deceptions. There is killing along with thievery. Then there is disloyalty in the relationship, whereby they breach the agreement and destructive, divisive, and damning ways. Bloodshed becomes a violent plague of bloodletting. That's just Hosea 1 and 2. Then God says, how is it that not a single individual has chosen to oppose this, who has been determined to contentiously contend against it? And there is none. No one who chooses to dispute their claims by arguing against them, rebuking them. Not a single individual. Your people are as contentious and as insulting as the priests. Now, that's tough. God said, okay, the religious leaders are scum. They have been contentious. They have corrupted my testimony. They've been thieves. They're robbing the people. They're idiots. They're irrational. They're idiots. And yet, there's not a single one of you throughout time who has been willing to openly confront the rabbis. Not one. And the reason is that the people have become as insulting and as contentious, as quarrelsome, as taunting and as adverse as their religious leaders. You know, the question is, did the rabbis corrupt the people?
Or vice versa.
Or did the people enable, through their own corruption, the rabbis? Therefore, you have stumbled and you have fallen on this day. And the one who claims to speak for God has faltered and stumbled with you during the darkness. So therefore, I will make a parable of your destruction and your destructive attempt to be like your mother. Hosea 2 opens with a condemnation of your mother. She's a whore, she's a harlot, she's a prostitute. So God is turning back to that line. I didn't go all the way back to Hosea 2, but so therefore I will make a parable of your destructive attempt to be like your mother, the one who raised you. And M is actually not only the one whom you were conceived, to whom you were conceived, born, nurtured, and raised, but it's also the intersection of two different paths along the point of departure. My people are ineffective, and they are silenced in this way, serving as a metaphor for self-inflicted destruction, perishing because of what they have done to themselves as a result of a lack of knowledge and corrupted information. Indeed, because you have rejected and avoided knowledge leading to understanding, I will also reject and avoid you. So you shall be separated from serving as my ministers. And since you have ignored and forgotten the Almighty's Torah, I will ignore, cease to care about, and forget about your children also. That's tough language. But it would be inappropriate for us to ignore the fact that the chosen people have chosen to separate themselves from God. They have chosen to breach the covenant. They have chosen to ignore their relationship. They've chosen the religious establishment over this relationship. And God's not amused. So it is in that light that we should look and understand God's warning to the Lion of Yehuda. God, returning now to Yahshua 29, he says, there shall be a limited time to approach and meet Yah. This is Yahshua 29:3. Then Ariel will exist for me and will approach me as if she were a lion gathered in by God. We have 13 years left in the summer of 2020. We have just a shade over 13 years left to Yahweh's return with Dod. And when he returns with Dod, he's going to restore the earth to the conditions found in the Garden of Eden. And that means that there's going to be no religious people, no political people, no militaristic people, no conspirators. There's going to be no one who denies Yahweh, who does not know Yahweh's name, who does not love Yahweh, who is not part of the covenant. That's everyone who survives that return.
Sounds great to me.
It sounds good to me. And if you like camping out, if that's your thing, you know, I'm here camping out on an island. It's a little raw out here, a little primitive out here. The views are forever. The beauty of the place is inspiring. The weather is just perfect. It is a wonderful place to camp out with God. Now, I got up this morning a little before 5 o'clock. The first light was just beginning to streak across the sky. And I came into my study, which overlooks the Caribbean Sea, and started to write. And it was such a joy. And gradually the sky lightened and turned every color of red and orange and purple as the sun began to rise. And there's an island that I look out over from my vantage point, and the seas, you know, 10 colors of blue, and the sky and the clouds. I feel like I'm camping out with you. I don't know any difference other than it'll be even more intimate and perfect. But we can live that experience even now. But there's a limited time. And just because there are 13 years left does not mean you ought to count on having 13 years. The world is falling apart and disintegrating rapidly. And so it's very important that if you're listening to this message and you have an interest in getting to know God, that you know that the time to approach Him is limited. And by the way, why put off the best and most enjoyable relationship in the world?
Yeah.
I mean, we have the best job in the history of jobs. We work for the perfect boss. It's all positive and no negative. Why would you want to push that off? No. I was talking, I have four friends over at the house there, even now in the kitchen with Leah. And, you know, they spend a lot of time talking about our relationship with Yah. And the one thing that all of us have in common, we're all abused by our parents. All of us.
Wow.
And since it's the majority of people who've either been abused by their parents or had problems with siblings or abused by a spouse, you know, I had the trifecta in that regard, that you need to know that Yah was the perfect dad. Set apart spirit is the perfect mom. The covenant is the perfect family. And so there is the possibility of having that relationship that so many of us were deprived of. So then Ariel, Aruel, will exist for me and will approach me if she were the Lion of God. And I will camp out as if I were your home, wrapped all around you. And I'll be your rock, a stone pillar and watchtower. And I will establish defensive fortifications for you. Yeah, it's this is the antithesis of the religious God. God is not asking anyone to serve Him, is He?
No.
Not asking anyone to lift Him up in prayer, is He? He's not asking anyone to sing His praises. Not asking anyone to make a sacrifice for Him. He most certainly isn't asking anyone to fight for Him, is He? Not asking anyone to make a donation to Him.
No.
Just the opposite. He says, I will camp out as if I were your home, wrapped all around you. And I'll be your rock, a stone pillar and a watchtower. And I will establish defensive fortifications for you. No, I said we're going back to the Garden of Eden. You say, well, why do we need defensive fortifications? Well, weren't there defensive fortifications around the Garden of Eden?
There were.
Yeah. There was death and dying. Hostility outside the garden. God made the garden a perfect place. He wrapped Himself around Adam and Chawa. He was their home. That was Yeshaya 29:4. 29:5 reads, however, outside of the land, you'll be humiliated. There, you shall speak from the gutter and out of the rubble. Your teachings and your commandments, your prayers and promises will cause your demise. the sound of your voice shall come to exist as if it were a ghost in the land. Then from the rubble, your commandments, your prayers, your instructions and promises will resonate in guttural undertones and doleful whispers. So if you are a Udev, and the last, well, certainly the last 3.5 years, but perhaps even the last 7 of these 13 years that remain, they're going to be hellish. I mean, they already are. Think of the numbers of people. I think it's 11,000 children a day are starving to death in India because of the asinine response to COVID. Because their parents can't work. 11,000 children a day are starving to death just in India. Wow. We are in a hellish period. And it's getting worse. And there is no indication that it will ever get better. And so God is saying that outside of the land, you're going to be humiliated. There, you know, you're going to speak out of the gutter, out of the rubble. Your teachings and commandments, that would be your Talmud and your ridiculous minion prayers where you bob your heads up and down. They're going to cause your demise. They're despicable. The sound of your voice will exist as if it were a ghost in the land. So it is important that we recognize that God will take care of those who choose to rely on it. That's the prerequisite for God taking care of his people. You don't rely on him, you're on your own. You rely on him, he'll take care of you. Now, that does not mean that your life is going to be perfect.
Okay.
No. You know, there are times when, you know, I have a joint or two that acts my age. There are times where I say things I ought not say and I regret them. I have, like Dote did, like Moshe did, like most everyone on earth has. I have troubled relations with some of those that shall remain unnamed at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
God didn't say that it's all going to be perfect. Kirk, you know, your wife is suffering, and it's been tough on her.
Yes.
God did not say when she came down with this illness. I mean, the one thing that you notice that no covenant member said, let's pray that she get healed and it's all better. That's not God's
Christian
business.
Only the Christian neighbors. Yeah,
that is. That's right. And that's embarrassing because that's not God's rule.
No.
He makes it better for us in terms of our understanding and our confidence and our comfort living in this world and gives us a sense of purpose in this world. And the utmost confidence that where we're headed is ideal, where we're enriched and empowered, taken to the 7th dimension. But God would be wasting his time, our time, by trying to heal everything that was wrong with us, by trying to eliminate every possible mistake and ache and pain and accident. It's a lot of what's wrong with our world is because we have created this sense of entitlements, free education, free health care. You know, you're entitled to all of these things when you haven't worked for them. And what it does is it destroys your sense of values. It destroys your character. And it creates people who don't have anything they can contribute. And God knows that's flat out wrong. It is counterproductive. And so the worst thing God could do is to make our lives pain-free. No frustrations, nothing to overcome, no financial problems, no family problems, no work problems, no money problems, no physical aches and pains, disease problems, no accidents. Our lives are just pristine. No character. No sense of values. I was talking to a young lady today that has become a good friend of ours here on the island. And she, like so many, has entered. She had a father who was a cult leader, Christian cult leader, polygamist, exceedingly dishonest and abusive. Her oldest brother, he locked in a shed and fed dog food for a year. Beat his wives senseless. A horrible human being. She's had two siblings that overdosed on drugs. They couldn't handle it. The legacy of it all. She came out of it stronger. She survived it and has confidence that she knows that she can survive no matter what's thrown at her. And it made her a better person. The greatest thing that ever happened to me is the worst thing that ever happened to me. My father was abusive. Having figured out how to survive that and overcome it was the thing that gave me the scars that developed my character. Had that not occurred, I think I'd be useless to you. God's not promising that he's going to make our lives without any frustration. Moshe had frustrations. People were yapping at him all the time. Dode had a lifetime's worth of frustrations. And so God's not promising everything's going to be perfect in this life. He's promising that everything is perfect in the next if we rely on him. It is interesting, by the way, in this particular passage that there is this next passage, I would have to say, that there is a real difference as to what is written. The Masoretic text speaks of Zar Atah, which would mean your illegitimate foreign invaders, those among you who are unauthorized, loathsome, and nauseating in their alien presence. The great Isaiah scroll reveals Zed Atah. So rather than Zar Atah, it's Zed Atah, one letter difference. It speaks of your arrogant and presumptuous rebels who are boiling over with religious fervor, seething with anger. The difference between Zar and Zed is that Zed is a foreign invader who is loathsome and nauseating, and a Zed is an arrogant and presumptuous religious person who there is no hint of their being a foreigner. So it is, if it's Zed, God speaking of the propensity of his people to be disgusting because of their religion. And if it's Zar, it's God speaking of the disgusting nature of the folks that, like the so-called Palestinians or the Arab Muslims that would seek to destroy Israel. This is how it reads. Then the confusing clamor of the masses and the commotion caused by the disorderly riots and the uproar of the agitating protesters, Harmon, of your arrogant and presumptuous rebels, who are boiling over with religious fervor and seething with anger, Zedata, shall come to be like the soot of a furnace, even like chaff. With the most confusing clamor of the cruel agitators and the commotion caused by disorderly riots of the ruthless protesters, angrily and arrogantly passing through en route to being banished. This shall come to pass suddenly and unexpectedly in an instant. That's already happened. And it's happening around the world. It began here when a really disgusting human being, George Floyd. A thief, a man who pistol whipped a pregnant woman, thief, drug addict. He was had high concentrations of two exceedingly dangerous drugs, fentanyl and methamphetamines, in his system when he was arrested. He was COVID positive when he was arrested. He resisted arrest and was a counterfeiter. And he was driving under the influence. He's just all around bad guy. And Black Lives Matter, which is founded by Marxists, whose principal purpose is to overthrow capitalism and to impose Marxism. And there are two, these women that started this are so stupid. They have no concept of what would happen if they got their wish. But they're very clear. They say that their agenda does not succeed unless capitalism is overthrown. That's their purpose. That's why they partner with Antifa. And they want revolution. That's why they encourage the violence at their protests. And they speak very openly about it. And when you recognize that should they get their wish, should there be a socialist communist revolution in America, that free enterprise is overthrown, then they and all blacks will be infinitely worse off. Look at the People's Republic of China. Blacks are absolutely and consistently rounded up by their skin color and harassed. They're given no rights. If you look at the Uyghurs, a different race than the Chinese, they're sent by the millions to re-education camps, concentration camps. Communism almost always is racist. And in communism, there isn't any opportunity for anyone. And all of the entitlements that these protesters are receiving based upon the productivity of the free enterprise system, after receiving those entitlements, they want to throw it back in the face of the people who were generous. It's despicable, but we do have the clamor of masses of commotions and disorderly riots.
Craig, yes. can you name a single communist country where they are favorable and look favorably on Jewish people?
No. Yehudim? Look what Russia did. Look what China did.
So why, from the standpoint of what we're addressing mostly, is the call out of Yehudim from the United States. This is the worst news they can have.
Correct.
If they go communist and we go communist, it's over.
It's over for Jews, yeah. And in fact, if you look at the influence of liberals, and it's just amazing to me that most Jews are liberal politically, because the liberal establishment has gone off the reservation with anti-Semitism. In today's academic environment, it's all in favor of the mythical people known as the Fakistinians. Palestinians, but I'm going to call them the Fakistinians. And so in academic environments where political correctness is all that matters and lies are routinely taught as true, it's all about being anti-Jewish, anti-Israel. And the more liberal the institution, the more anti-Semitic they are. So for what's really truly amazing is that, you know, the rally around Martin Luther King, and yet his I Have a Dream speech was written by a Jew. The uprisings and the marches in Atlanta, which was where the civil rights movement began, all of it was funded. All of it was funded and supported by Jews. Even the Christian alliances that formed around them, they were founded by Jews. And the Jews were the first one to march with them. And then,
yes, Selma.
Then
Selma,
the, those that
they were the voice
black spirit their appreciation for all Jews have sacrificed for them by being anti-Semitic. It's despicable. And, of course, in the Black Lives Matter, you're right. You represent 93% of the time that a black is murdered, they're murdered by another black. The problem of murder in this country isn't whites killing blacks, it's black killing blacks. And so stop pointing the finger. It's completely and totally hypocritical and ridiculous. It's disgusting, really. But that riot has spread around the world. And they're making millions of dollars, raking in millions of dollars from capitalists while they try to overturn that system. And, you know, I'm no friend of America. But the fact is, America is the least racist nation, probably in the history of mankind. Kamala Harris, the vice president running mate of the ultimate dunderhead, the poor man is suffering from dementia. But you ought not be running for president if you have dementia. But Kamala Harris was at a town hall, and you know, some leftist academic moron from some university stood up and said, "Well, since America was founded on racism and betrayal of the black people, and was built based upon racism and slavery, how do you plan to make amends for that?" Yeah, restitution. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, I'm really glad that you brought that point up. And it's true. And we need to fight to restore the truth. And you're saying, you know, I'm going to tell you that in the history of humankind, as bad as America is, and I can name you 1,000 things that America has done that are revolting, it is still the ultimate success story in human history. There is no greater success story than America of all countries in the history of the world, especially when it comes to equal rights, especially when it comes to people having the opportunity to be whomever they wish to be. Never any other country in human history that can match it. And you want to say that it was built on racism and slavery? I'll tell you what, if the best country in the history of the world was built on racism and slavery, then I've been wrong all this time, because I've been against racism and slavery. I guess I was wrong. Thank you for pointing that out. Then the confusing clamor, and boy, is it confusing, because they're senseless. Clamor of the masses and the commotion caused by the disorderly riots, and they are riots, and the uproar of the agitating protesters, and it is like fingernails on the blackboard. As they justify robbing and killing and plundering of your arrogant and your presumptuous rebels who are boiling over with religious fervor and seething with anger. Yeah, from God's point of view, they shall be like the soot from a furnace. How much value does soot for a furnace have? Even like chaff,
mm-hmm.
with the confusing clamor and cruel agitation of these ruthless protesters angrily and arrogantly passing through en route to being banished. Good riddance. This shall come to pass suddenly, unexpectedly, and in an instant. Boy, did it ever. Could you even imagine something this inane, this violent, this utterly disorderly, this pervasive happening to this degree, this suddenly? Prophecy fulfilled right before our eyes. You will be held accountable, says Yahweh, of the vast array of spiritual implements through the thunderous proclamations, with earthquakes and discordant sounds, with a great voice, and with a strong and raging wind, in addition to the flames of a devouring fire. So, what do you think God's talking about there?
He's obviously talking about the last 7 years of the planet, but we're creeping up on it real fast. We're getting all everything in line to do it now. It's little
by
little.
Think
it's not like
I
it's,
think he's talking about the last days of the last 7 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He is not going to himself have a thunderous proclamation or earthquakes or discordant sounds, strong raging winds and flames of a devouring fire in the 7 years from now. He's speaking of the cusp of Yom Kippurim. He could even be speaking of the time between Yom Kippurim and Sukkot.
Hmm.
So this is the end of the end. For those who think that God's accommodating, for God's going to look and see the content of their heart, that God's going to be moved by their charitable donations, that God's going to be moved by their propensity to be politically correct, multicultural, march in the streets in favor of Black Lives Matter. Well, God's saying that as it relates to those loudmouth rioters, you'll be held accountable through thunderous proclamations with earthquakes and discordant sounds, with great voice, with a strong and raging wind, in addition to the flames of a devouring fire. It was interesting, just a week ago, there were 8 named storms in the Atlantic simultaneously. We've had the Gulf Coast hit now, 3 times with hurricanes this year?
Mm-hmm.
Devastating. I mean, I'm delighted that Yahweh has promised to protect my home, for doing this. So all those storms spooled up and went north of here, one south. But he has certainly hit America with a strong wind.
I'm kidding.
But soon it will be the strong wind and also flames of a devouring fire. Leigh and I were talking the other day about what do you do when you're just so many idiots saying so many stupid things? Well, she's saying, the end days witnesses, they're actually going to have fire that will jet out of their bowels. And I said, but you got to keep in mind that it's not their job to devour nations or vast swaths of conspirators or religious people. It's their job to confront all of the lies, to do Teruah stuff, to aggressively promote the truth and to aggressively confront the lies. Their arguments are going to be powerful and strong and compelling. But when idiots that promote politics and religion, Black Lives Matter types, advance their cause, what they say is so moronic, so hypocritical, so irrational, that when somebody points out the conflict between their testimony and the truth, they don't respond with evidence and reason. They don't debate, and they get to be belligerent and aggressive. And I think those individuals are the ones that are going to be toast. And so, I was going to say, you don't need to. I'm not asking you to sit around and negotiate with these foul-mouthed morons. So if one of them gets belligerent and goes into a physical attack mode or or just becomes stunningly irritating with their stupidity, they will disappear. But it's really Dode's job, working with Yahweh to irradiate, incinerate, incinerate the world. And so this is the last of the last days. And it shall be akin to a nightmare, with the darkness being exposed. This confusing clamor of the masses and the commotion caused by their disturbing riots and agitating protests. From all of the Gentiles and their nations. So God's certainly not coming back for his church, because it's the Gentiles that God is saying it's going to be a nightmare for. That these Gentiles and all their nations that have come to fight over and against Ariel, the Lion of God, the Ark of God, and those gathered by God. So this second coming that the Christians want so badly, the arrival of the Mahdi that Muslims want so badly, it's going to be a nightmare for them. It's going to be a nightmare for religious Jews. And it shall be akin to a nightmare, with the darkness being exposed, this confusing clamor of the masses and the commotion caused by the disturbing riots and agitating protests. It's one thing for us to expose and condemn them. It's another thing entirely for God to incinerate them. And these agitating protests are from all of the Gentiles in their nations that have come to fight, to be hostile to battle with Ariel, which is Yehudah, Judah, Jews.
Lion, yes.
This includes all those,
all
of those who battle against her, and all of those who fight against her construction of walls and barricades, and who deliberately distress and harass her, seeking to constrain and narrow her. Well, that's pretty specific, isn't it? Pretty specific. So what is Israel doing? It's built walls. Why did it build walls? Because the Muslims are terrorists. If they didn't have a fence around Gaza, then they would just have a steady influx of Islamic terrorists. So they built walls, and the world condemns them for building fences to keep their people safe. Well, God is condemning those who are condemning Israel for building these barricades. And, of course, what do all of the leftists and all the Muslims want to do? They want to constrain Israel. They want to force Israel to give up the West Bank. And they want Israel to give up Judea and Samaria so that it becomes, and they want them to give up Jerusalem so the nation becomes completely and totally indefensible. The two-state solution is only a solution if what you seek is the utter destruction of Israel and the obliteration of Jews. It will not bring peace unless you view Israel being torn to pieces as your objective. God says, and it will be like, this is God's telling you the future.
Yeah.
So this is where the world, as bad as it has become, it is going to get worse. And it shall be like when someone who is hungry dreams of growing physically stronger, and then he envisions himself eating, but that is aroused from his sleep, and his soul is not satisfied by the fantasy. It can be compared to a time when an individual is thirsty and they dream of recovery, and then he envisions himself drinking, but awakened, notices he is weakened and needs to recuperate, and his soul is unsettled and suddenly anxious, longing. So it shall be with the multitude of confused protesters and enraged rioters, all the Gentiles in their nation that have come to wage war against and over Mount Zion. Yeshaya 29:8. So they're going to, all of these who long to destroy Israel, these Gentiles, you know, for them it's going to be like the whole conspiracy concept. That's the why one of the many reasons I find Black Lives Matter so revolting is the conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
Black lives are miserable. In fact, the whites that are communists and socialists that are protesting beside them, their lives are miserable. They've got nothing. They've never accomplished anything. And the government has given them a free education. The government has given them food stamps. The government has supplied them with free telephones, free everything, free health care. And their lives are miserable. And the more money that is redistributed to them, the more miserable the lives become. And so they're seeking to blame someone else for their ineptitude, for their misery, for their failure. Typical conspiracy. And then they conjure up all manner of false interpretations of things that are very easily understood. And their view is always to twist it, turn the truth asunder, and to promote some absurd myth like that cops are out to hunt down and kill blacks, when simply a myth. And so God is saying that they will dream that these things are true, and yet they will be awakened from that stupor and find out, no. You know, they want reparations, and they've had reparations since 1965. It's only made the situation worse. So God is saying they are thirsty, they're hungry, they're dissatisfied. They're going to dream of a better situation under communism, under the utter destruction of the world as we know it. And that's their dream, and they're going to awaken from that dream, and it's going to be worse than they could have possibly imagined. That's what God is saying. So it shall be with the multitude of confused protesters, raged rioters of the Gentiles and their nations that have come to war to fight over Mount Zion. How many of them will scream against Zionists? Now, for those that don't want to be accused of being anti-Semitic, no, we're not against Jews, we're against Zionists. Well, that would put you in opposition to God, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mount Zion? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. God is a Zionist. You know, Zion, which means the signs posted along the way. That's on Mount Moriah. It is the signs posted between the home of David, and the home of God, Yahweh.
So how do they get from, let's say I lived in America, I'm a minority, since LBJ started the money flow of the Great Society, we're talking trillions of dollars now, aimed at minorities, and now it's the Jew, and now it's the Jews' fault. I'm just trying. How do you go from there to it's their fault?
Yeah, how do you?
What have they got to do with that?
How does that work? I don't understand.
No.
You're really breaking up, Kirk. It could be me that's breaking up my connection. If it is, I will. The last 30 minutes we have, I will call in another way. Hopefully, we're still communicating.
I can hear both of you pretty clear.
Okay.
Can
good.
You?
So it just could be, Kirk, it just faded out there. Consider the consequence, Yahweh said. of your own volition, and avoid allowing any societal influence to persuade you to linger, because you will be astonished and bewildered. Of your own volition, choose to close your eyes and shield your vision, because if you drink it in, you will become intoxicated, but not from wine. You may be shaken and stumble, but not from beer. My wife is amazingly inquisitive, and she has never met a detail that she does not cherish. When COVID came, she knew the names of the Batman that collected the bats, and Batwoman that that curated the bats, and Bat Lady that wrote all of the journal articles on synthesizing new triggers for the bats, and how the accident happened in that lab, and how the first infection started, and when they started, and how they disseminated around the world, and particularly what the every nature of this virus was inside and out, and had great detail on the involvement in this, not only of the Communist Party of China, but also the likes of Dr. Fauci of the United States, complicit. She knew it all. And she got so into the study of it that it began to affect her. And I said, I don't want to talk about it anymore. And I advise you to leave it alone. When Black Lives Matter became anti-Semitic and raised its ugly head, she tracked down the details, all of it, the founders, and their propensity to be hypocrites. And it affected her. And I said, I don't want you to talk about it anymore. You need to leave it alone. When you look at governments, the most inhuman government in the world today is the Communist Party of China. And she is a student of it. And I said, I don't want you to talk about it anymore. What Yang was saying is that the world has become so vile. There are so many horrible hypocrites. We are so lost. And that the sources of information are so bad that we ought not look anymore. He's suggesting that something I've known for a while, which is that the mainstream media is typically wrong about 80% of the time. About 80% of what they report is inaccurate. So you really have to have a terrific filter to be able to review the news and not be misled by it. And that's the mainstream media. And that's doing your due diligence. And your due diligence requires you to have a lot of experience. You have to have some understanding of the things that you're reading or viewing, or you'll have no ability to filter fact from fiction. But it also means that you do fact checks. And that's one of the things I got into, with particularly with COVID. Found out that almost everything we're being told about COVID was untrue. Doesn't mean there isn't a virus. There is one. Doesn't mean that the government's complicit in some kind of conspiracy. They're not. But everything we've been told about COVID is stunningly misleading. The death toll, the number of people that are infected, the difference between it and the flu. Everything we've been told is misleading. And I realized that the media, in its reporting of COVID, the media in its reporting of Black Lives Matter, I don't even think is 5% accurate. And the consequence is grievous. But if you go beyond the mainstream media and you do what the conspiratorial types would have you do, and you would listen to their sources, you go from 80% inaccurate to 99.999% inaccurate. those that are promoting the government plots on COVID or government plots on Black Lives Matter, and that they're all government actors and these things haven't really occurred, or that, you know, airplane exhausts or chemtrails, and that vaccines are a government plot to control people, or 9/11 was a government conspiracy. These people, that their sources of, let's put it in air quotes, information are just pure bullshit. It's just amazing that they could be fooled by such ignoramuses. And so if you look on social media, and if you get your news from videos, 99.99% of what you're witnessing is deliberate fraud. And if it's from the mainstream media, it's about 80% inaccurate. And so God is saying things are getting so bad, they're so twisted, that if you don't have a spectacular filter, you don't know who I am, if you don't know who I am, if you don't understand the covenant, if you don't understand why I am anti-religious and anti-political and anti-patriotic, and I all I want is a relationship with you, and I want you to distance yourself from these influences, that it's going to be nigh on impossible. Because the lies breed more lies. The riots breed more riots. This is a really important statement that Yahweh is making. Consider the consequences, and of your own volition, avoid allowing any societal influence to persuade you to linger. Reflect upon the meaning, but do not be persuaded by any individual or institution to delay considering the consequences, because you're going to be astonished. You're going to be bewildered. You're going to be astounded. So of your own volition, choose to close your eyes. Shield your vision, because if you drink it in, you're going to become intoxicated. Yeah, but it's not going to be from wine. You're going to be shaken and stumbled, but it won't be from beer. I don't think there's any other time that Yahweh has actually asked us to not be observant. But that's how bad it's been.
Oh, it isn't. Yeah, it is very bad.
You know, I am guilty of, for years, hosted the Shattering Myths show, and it was my strategy on that show to break the 3 hours up into three sections, and the first section was a news hour. And what I would do is I would read excerpts of news stories, because I would read 20 to 30 newspapers a day. And I would take excerpts of news that I would point out not only where the news was wrong, but what was really happening behind the story that we were reading. You know, if it was the overthrow of the Ukraine, who was behind it, why they were doing it, and why we're being misled regarding it. You know, and I don't do that much anymore. I used to do it a lot. I don't do it much anymore. I will occasionally take news stories and begin the show with them. And so I think there are days when you need to do it. I need to point out the hypocrisy of Black Lives Matter, the stupidity of our response to the COVID virus. But for the most part, God is saying it's now so bad and it's so obvious that rather than being influenced by all of that, close your eyes to it.
Wow.
Focus on me instead.
Well, that's okay. So, as long as you have enough place to turn.
So reading Yeshaya 29, if that was all we gained from it, it'd be worth this story. Focus on what's important, my words. Focus on the covenant. Focus on our relationship. Because the world itself will stagger you, will bewilder you. Strong words. Therefore, Yahweh will pour out for a time upon you a spirit of diminished consciousness. He will close your eyes with regard to the prophets. And concerning your leadership, he has withdrawn the ability to receive or communicate messages from God as prophets. It has been 2,500 years since God spoke through a Yehudim. It's a very long time, isn't it? God has said, as it relates to his people, I'm going to close your ear for a time. I'm going to give you a diminished sense of awareness. I'm going to incapacitate you. I'm going to close your eyes with regard to the prophets. So you're going to be able to write your Talmud arguments, but you are not, because it was for a period of time, you're just not going to understand the prophets. And your leadership, I have nothing to do with them. I've completely withdrawn from your leadership. Jews are not going to receive or communicate messages from God as prophets. And it has been true for the last 2,500 years, 2,400 years for certain. Now, if you are a Jew listening to this and you've been told that the rabbis speak on behalf of God, they interpret the word of God, that you're not smart enough to understand God and have to listen to the rabbis instead, God is saying, I made them stupid. And now you might say, why would God do that? Why would God deliberately dumb down his own people? Well, let me read this next statement, and we can talk about that. Therefore, the prophecy regarding the consequences of this entire revelation shall exist concerning you in the manner of the words of a written document which is sealed. When to reveal the way, the book is placed before someone in an effort to become aware and understand, they will say, please read this. But he will answer, I am unable to comprehend it because it is sealed. And should they give the book to someone who is ignorant and illiterate and who cannot understand what was written, asking, please read this, he will reply, I'm clueless and cannot read the written words. Then Yahweh said, indeed, for as much as these people approach me with their mouths and with their lip service, putting on airs, they avoid exercising good judgment. They have removed their hearts and have distanced themselves. As a result, the fear of me exists as a condition of men, which is taught by rote.
That's absolutely true.
So what in the world would God do this for a moment? Why would God blind his people? Why would God blind his people?
So they can't use it against him by twisting it?
Yep.
Because they didn't like him?
Yep.
Yeah, makes
the
sense to me.
Jewish leadership remains so overwhelmingly religious and rebellious, with Jews literally equating being Jewish with Judaism, and vehemently attacking those who would dare to differ, that the worst possible outcome would have been to give rabbis the capacity to make their religion appear somewhat credible or actually beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
Better the people and their religion remain defiantly unaware of Yahweh's plans than Jews, after conceiving Judaism, after conceiving Christianity and Islam, create a belief system capable of intoxicating a rational individual and thereby plague the world.
How about that?
Yeah, think about it, guys, for a moment.
Yeah.
Jews have managed a convolute Passover.
Yeah.
They've managed a convolute Passover to the point that at a Seder, they no longer serve an edible portion of lamb. They've convinced their brethren that the best way to observe Kippurim, reconciliations, is through deprivation. They made the Shabbat the most difficult day of the week. With so many rules, it's become work. And that's not to mention what they've done to deny the essential nature of Yahweh's name. They've gone so far as to ascribe a star to David rather than a shepherd's staff to Dode. Oh, by the way, that star came out of the Zohar. It's from Kabbalah.
Yeah.
It's six phallixes and a womb, a vagina. It's like every other symbol of man. It's all about what man holds dear. Their menorah has nine candles rather than Yahweh's prescribed six. They continue to search for a nameless Messiah, even though God has clearly pronounced the Messiah's name and let us know that he is returning. They deny that Yosha served as the Pesach Eel, and as a result, they have forfeited the benefits of his sacrifice. They have even replaced Yahweh's Torah with their Talmud. Now, fortunately, at least for the rational, as a result of Yahweh's intervention, the resulting religion, Judaism, is no more credible than Christianity or Islam. For secular Jews, the truth is accessible and not hidden under tomes of religious chicanery and buffoonery. Now, there's another reason that God may have incapacitated the descendants of Yahweh, especially their leadership. The Zed, hubris of his people, likely played a role. The malignant residue of rabbinical arrogance and their sense of superiority, their audacity to misrepresent Yahweh's testimony and malign his name, must be exposed and repudiated for there to be reconciliation. For that to occur, someone from outside the fold would have to correct, discredit, and humble rabbis.
Which would be
such a task.
Embarrassing.
Yep, yeah. Such a task is one that very few Jews would dare. However, those with the courage and conviction to do so would likely be sectarian antagonists who have disavowed an interest in Yahweh and his Torah. Typically because they wrongly associate the Torah with their religious foes. Therefore, after a millennia of using Yehudim exclusively as his prophets, his messengers to the world, God realized that the most appropriate way to get his people's attention would be to repudiate and bypass those who have errantly, presumptuously claimed to represent him. God would therefore serve his words up to secular Jews on a goyim platter. Sure, it would be humiliating, but that has become the only effective prescription. And now you know why it was so important to read, to translate, to introduce Yad Yahu with Yashaya 29. And we're not done. God has said, give them the book, they won't understand it. Ask someone to read it, they will say, I just don't get it. Indeed, for so much as these people approach me with their mouths or with their lip service, putting on airs, they avoid exercising good judgment, and they have removed their hearts and have distanced themselves from me. There is no love of Yahweh in Judaism. Lots of lip service. Lots of airs. But they avoid exercising good judgment. They have removed their hearts and distanced themselves from Yahweh. They teach the fear of God. And the fear of God is a condition of men. A father should never be feared. Someone you love should never be feared. A God who is willing to protect you, to free you, to liberate you, to empower you, to enrich you, to enlighten you, ought to be loved, not feared. For behold, as for me, I will once again, at yet another time, approach to do wonderful things with the people who are closely related, with surprising fulfillments and inspiring signs, along with marvelous and miraculous things. And then the wisdom and technical acumen of the scholars, theologians, and sages, as well as the discernment and understanding of their most educated teachers, shall vanish, ceasing to exist. In contrast to those who claim to be scholars, those who claim that they have discernment and understanding, in contrast to the scholars, the theologians, and sages, Yahweh is saying everything that they say and they themselves are going to cease to exist, while all the while I'm going to approach and do wonderful things. I'm going to fulfill Pesach. I'm going to enable the benefits of matzah. I will adopt you into my family on Bukhorov. I will enrich and empower you on Shabuah. I will speak through those who choose to listen to me on Teruah. And I'm going to reconcile myself with Yehudah and Yisrael on Kippurim so we can all camp together on Sukkah. God says, in spite of my people, in spite of their religion, I'm going to do marvelous things. I'm going to approach. I'm going to fulfill things that are inspiring. And even while I'm doing it, the scholars, the theologians, the sages, as well as the discernment of the educated teachers, is going to vanish and cease to exist. You know, when God asked us to do this, and we first thing we said is, we're not qualified, you know, we're not a scholar, not a professor, we're not an expert in these subjects. Thank goodness. Because God just said all the experts are idiots. God just said all the experts are wrong. He just said all the experts, I'm going to see that they're shut up. I'm tired of all of the lies that they have perpetrated. So you don't want to be an expert. You don't want to be a theologian. You don't want to be a scholar. Because it's worse than God saying, I can't use you. It's God saying, I'm going to eliminate you. I'm going to exterminate you. You're a vermin infected rat. Oi, so this warning to those who lack understanding and have become profoundly difficult with regard to Yahweh. Your counsel and your schemes will no longer be known. Those whose undertakings they have tried to conceal in the dark will say, who will see us? And why will we be exposed? Who actually knows and genuinely understands the nature of our actions? It was like that meeting I had with Jerry Falwell. No one would ever hold him accountable when Jerry Falwell Jr. fell. Now, he didn't think that anyone would ever dare
challenge him. Yeah.
Challenge him. And he just got worse and worse over time. It's true with all of them. They conceal their actions in the darkness. They said, so who actually knows and genuinely understands the nature of our actions? I do. Thanks to Yahweh's testimony, which is why I'm doing so. You know, the first religion I impugned was Islam. I'll read Prophet of Doom for that stinging indictment. I would love for more people to read it just so that you understand the methodology and realize that we're being consistent. We go where the evidence leads. You know, next I was able to prove beyond any doubt that the religion of Christianity, every aspect of it, was false in questioning Paul. From its assumptions to its terminology, from its scriptures to its doctrines, from its incorporation of pagan lore to its internal contradictions. It's all invalidated by comparing the Christian claims to Yahweh's testimony. For those who have been part of these rewrites, you know that rabbinical Judaism is my current target. One that has been fleshed out during the final edits of the volumes of Yada Yahweh. God hates religion, and so do I. Nothing in all of human history has been as beguiling, as corrupting, as destructive, or deadly as religion. You know, just as Moshe Moses was chosen because he understood and despised the religion and politics, the economics and militarism, even the conspiracies that he had exposed, that he had been exposed to in Egypt. Here largely because of my willingness to excoriate the same menacing malignancies in our time. In this regard, the covenant's lone prerequisite is to walk away from the Babel confusion of man. Doing so will not occur to the degree that Yahweh desires until someone speaks out against these toxins, these intoxicating institutions. And I do not think this has been done previously on God's behalf. No one has collectively spoken out using evidence and reason against Islam, Judaism, Christianity, and socialist secular humanism. All of those foes, no one. And then at the same time, share Yahweh's testimony. Yeah. It has been my experience that the most famous religious clerics know that they are deceiving the faithful. I've addressed this issue with some of them and can assure you that they are knowingly perpetrating a fraud. But as God is indicating here, it is hell to get them to admit that they are wrong, especially since it means that those they are fleecing will stop donating. It's not good for business. Religious deceptions have become exceedingly obvious and odious to me, and I'm not alone. This is what God said. Your perversions have inverted reality, having turned things upside down by claiming the opposite of what is actually true. It is comparable to the potter's clay, continually reckoning and regarding itself such that it should claim of the one who designed and fabricated it, "Huh, he didn't make me." Oh, yeah? How'd you get here? Or should the thing conceived and created say of the one who formed him, he is the one without knowledge or understanding? Yeah, sure. We want to have our enlightened say, oh, that Torah, that Old Testament stuff, that New Testament stuff, that's sheer folly. You know, man wants to pretend that he is the sum of all knowledge and that man is the one who is enlightened, not the Creator. No matter what man determines in terms of that the universe was created, that based on relativity, it was created 14 billion years ago, and that 14 billion years means that it is 6 days old, based upon the relative nature of time. That life came to exist because it was designed. And it's obvious. Water came to exist on this planet because it was placed here. And yet they'll create all manner of impossible lies, of things that are just so ludicrous, so that they can deny God. And they're like the clay on the potter's wheel. Oh, no, he didn't make me. Nope. I'm spontaneous, you know. Some little amoebas out there, they had a party. And at the amoeba party, they decided we're going to make people. And we're going to find a way to replicate. We're going to find a way to find food. We're going to find a way to nourish ourselves with that food. And we're going to find a way to deny the fact that gene mutations are almost always lethal. No, we're going to turn all that on its head. And the collection and colony of amoebas, we're going to make man. And then man is going to be the sum total of evolution. Yeah, we don't need no stinking creator. The clay on the potter's wheel. I have no idea who we are. And until we understand who we are, I know what's so amazing is that those who would demean God are spitting in the face of the very God who would elevate us. The very God that says, I want to make you like me.
Like me?
Yeah. I'm not demeaning you, and I'd have every reason to do so based upon our relative difference. And yet, you puny, ungrateful clay, you're demeaning me? What's wrong with you? But that's really what's happened. You know, we have God who is saying, I have every reason to demean you, and I want to lift you up and empower you and enrich you and make you just like me. And instead, you want to deny me. You want to deny that I exist, that I did any of this, and that you're the sum total of everything. And you're nothing but clay on a potter's wheel. And oh, by the way, I happen to be the potter. I'm going to spend you right on off. See how you like that? You know, when we came to realize that the universe had a beginning and was therefore created, when we recognized that all living organisms had been programmed using the language of DNA, when we noticed that our cosmic assessments were 95% inaccurate, and once it became obvious that macroevolution from the simplest to the most complex being was unrealistic and rationally impossible, we should have accepted the fact that we were clay on a brilliant potter's wheel. It should have been the perfect opportunity to appreciate our maker. And yet those claiming to be the smartest among us, the scientists and philosophers, screamed otherwise. Obviously, it's not God who lacks understanding, but instead men. Without the proper perspective, we have become lost in a cosmic ocean of extraneous details. We were told that this would occur, but we did not listen. Most never will. You know, when the choice is between reason and faith, reason prevails. When choosing between science and the church, it's an easy choice, which is why science prevailed. But when the debate is between science and God, academia does not fare well. Worse, scholars tend to become presumptuous and arrogant.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I wondered if we should continue this or pick it up where we are this time next week. I hate to, even though
yeah,
we have lots of people who are listening, we are recording. I think we're probably better off picking this up on the other side of Kippurim, because that's
okay.
What God's talking about.
Yeah,
this is the day of reconciliations, and He's going to have a lot to say about Sukkah and the celebration of Sukkah, and
mm-hmm.
what awaits us if we stop being so belligerent and so arrogant, and just realize who we are. It's a really good place to be, actually.
Yeah,
I'm really comfortable being clay on God's wheel.
Yeah, what's it? Hosea, that you know, just the clay talk back to the potter. I thank
yeah,
God.
I
but,
think not.
Yeah. The I'm funny. Last night I read the creation story and yada yada again. You know, all the technical detail just as a refresher, and it was amazing that that hit home.
Boy, we have Kirk's voice is sounding more and more like a musical instrument. It's melodious, Kirk, but. JB, can you hear him, or is it we've lost our connection? I think we have lost our connection.
JB?
Well, timing was good. May Yah bless. Happy day of reconciliations of Kippurim. May you celebrate it as a gift of God, and we look forward to being with you on this side of Sukkah. Yah bless.
Shalom.